Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Our reading this morning comes to us from the Gospel of Matthew, and I'll be reading from chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
I thought I'd live a louder life. I'd learn a lot and get it right. I'd run to loft, I'd drink all night, I'd be a living archetype, and in a blinding flash of light, I'd see that one great insight, but silence called me deeper still. Like nothing I know else will ever will.
After worship, each Sunday, Linda and I take a list of all of the folks who have shared their address on those blue folders, and we deliver mugs to people. And sometimes it's folks like Myra and Elizabeth, who've been here for a few years, that finally put their name down. And sometimes it's someone that's visiting for the very first time. But we do our very best for all of those folks that put down their information that first Sunday to deliver a mug. It's an opportunity for the two of us to debrief on worship and to think a little bit about what's coming up in the coming weeks. And so last week we were delivering a mug that was out by 80 and Watt. And I usually drive, and Linda, in theory, has it on the phone of where we're going. That's not a strength. Mark, are you? Mark, can I get an amen? That is true. That is not a strength of Linda's. And so we're out by 80 and Watt, and what I'm trying to do, and I'm pretty convinced that I'm doing it, is I'm getting onto Business 80, because it turns out that Interstate 80 and Business 80 are different roads. They take you to different places. So Linda says, oh, this is it. And I confidently agree, yep, this is it. And so I pull on to the highway. And as soon, you know, right when that moment when you're there and you make that turn, this is not it. It's not it. This is Interstate 80, not Business 80. I dread that area. For people that live there, I don't know how you figure out your way around in that moment. So we continued on, and you can tell just the way I'm telling the story. Like, I don't like the notion of we're going to waste 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour. Like, you have to go all the way around the top of Sacramento. And Linda's just calmly saying, it's fine. It's not fine. We're trying to rush. Like, we have three more mugs to deliver. Let's move. It's okay. Be calm. It's at least 10 minutes out of the way. So there's a Buddhist monk who's visiting New York City, and he's told by his Western host that they could save 10 minutes by making a complex transfer in the subway at Grand Central Station. So they do it. And when they emerge from the underground in Central Park, the monk goes and sits down. His host says, what are you doing? I thought we would just enjoy the 10 minutes, the monk says. I'm not good at just enjoying the 10 minutes. I like to keep life moving and to keep that pace going. So reflecting on Sabbath for 3 weeks has been a significant process for me and for Sarah and for our family as we try to figure out, what exactly does Sabbath look like for us? Where have we been at our best in marking off an entire day as a family to be in community with others and to reflect on God's grace and love? And where do we simply sprint right past Sabbath like I was out there on 80, Business 80? There's a pastor whose name is Marianne McKibben Dana. She's a Presbyterian and she lives on the East Coast. And she wrote a book for the Young Clergy Women's Project that's called Sabbath in the Suburbs. She decided to practice the art of keeping Sabbath with her family for an entire year. And I found a lot of her writing this week really helpful in my own thinking. And so I want to share just a little bit of her writing with you. She and her family decided to start Sabbath, start practicing the art of keeping Sabbath right now, Labor Day weekend, a few years ago. They decided that this would be the perfect time because as parents with young children, they're kind of on the school year schedule. So this is actually when the new year begins for their family. But Labor Day weekend came for them without any Sabbath. They rushed right past it. There was no conversation, no deliberate decision. She says, "We work all weekend getting the kids ready for school, buying the last minute items their daughter Caroline needs for second grade. They dig out the backpack from the closet where it's been buried since June, and they open the lunchbox, as every parent can attest to. You're nervous as you open the lunchbox. Did we accidentally leave something in for the last 3 months? And how nasty is that going to be when I open this space?" Finally, as they get those things ready, they take some time for some fun. They go to the pool. It's going to be exciting, but they have to rush to get there because it's going to close. And then as soon as they get there, they need to enjoy every moment of being there. This is it. This is the last time to be at the pool. The pressure's on to enjoy this experience. And she says, "We missed it." It wasn't leisurely, slow down, reflective time. It was tinged with guilt and this nagging sense that there's so much more to do. So she and her partner are going to sleep and she says, "We missed it again." And her partner deadpans, "It's right there in the name, Labor Day. Like, we were doomed from the very beginning. It's not our fault." It's so easy to become unmindful, to just do what's next. A body in motion stays in motion. We go to work and we go home. We make dinner. We eat. We get the kids to bed. We clean up. We tidy the family room. We answer emails. We fall into bed. We lather. We rinse, we repeat. For many of us, that is how we too often find ourselves. And Jesus offers an alternative. And this morning, I want to take some time to reflect on that with us. God breaks the cycle and calls us to live otherwise. We experience this in Matthew chapter 11. And so I want to take a moment to read this for us one more time. "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." We began this worship series 2 weeks ago, reflecting on what Sabbath might mean in our everyday lives and how we might turn to the story of creation in which God creates for 6 days and then God takes time to step away from the office, as one person said it, to just rest. And trust that creation will continue to be without us in that space. And last week, Linda invited us to reflect on the fourth commandment in Exodus. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And how this was an act of radical resistance for a people who were living under the tyranny of an empire. For them to take a day of rest was to say no to the emperor and yes to God. So there are radical implications of what resting actually does. And the truth is, I think it's a little overwhelming for some of us in our own lives to actually take time to pause and to rest for a day, to be with our feelings, to slow down and not to live according to who we are by our title or by the work that we do, but by simply being a child of God. So this morning we turn to Jesus and his own understanding of Sabbath, and what it might mean for us and how it might teach us. And to be sure, Jesus didn't practice the art of Sabbath in the ways that most people wanted him to. He was constantly getting in trouble around this. And I think it's a challenge then for us as followers of Jesus to try to figure out what significance do we take from the Jewish practice of Sabbath and how do we redefine that as followers of Jesus? What does that look like in our day and in our time? See, Jesus says in Mark, "The Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath." So it feels like we do have some degree of freedom about how we might approach the Sabbath. Jesus seems to take Sabbath seriously, but he certainly finds his own way. For me, the most radical thing that Jesus does is he simply stops. Even when people are in dire need, he steps away and takes time. It's not like he waits to make sure all of his to-do list is finished, because the reality is for most of us, it never gets finished. He simply says the sun will rise and Sabbath begins. In Mark as well, this makes folks upset. Some parents among us might hear this phrase differently. See, the disciples come to Jesus and they say, everyone is searching for you. It's like, where have you been? What are you doing? And there's this tinge of guilt that feels like it's in that story to me. For every parent in the room, Dana writes about it like this. I was in the basement folding your clothes. That's where I've been. Or I was in the bathroom, for heaven's sake. Like, it's okay that I wasn't right there for you at that moment. Jesus dismisses the crowds, filled with people still aching to be healed in order to get away for some restoration. He goes up the mountain. He goes across the water. He finds time and takes time for himself. He manages to carve out that Sabbath despite the dire needs of people around him. I have a hard enough time setting aside these trivial things in my own life. The mail on the kitchen table, or the Facebook post that comes up. I allow myself always to be distracted by those things. See, for many of us, carving out time for Sabbath is this dance between the time of togetherness and the time of being alone. And I want to suggest this morning that Sabbath is a both and, not an either or. That as we set apart a day to be in Sabbath, that we're going to need to hold some things in tension. One is that Sabbath is held in community. The Jewish tradition is to gather together in families around a meal and to worship, just as we are this morning. Sabbath is also time on our own. And for many of us, we'll have to hold those in tension. At what moment in our life are we going to need community to be in Sabbath? To need to know that we're in it with others? And at what moment in our own lives will we need some space from all of the demands that we hold, that being in family can hold upon us, and we need to carve out some of our time to be with God? As a pastor, this writer experimented for an entire year with her family. And a couple of the things that I found liberating in that practice, first is that the place that she started is not the place that she ended. So I want to invite you to think about, what does Sabbath look like in your own life? For her as a pastor, Sunday is not a place of Sabbath. So she began with her family taking Friday evening into Saturday. And too many times, I think she would say, they stumbled. They didn't actually live out Sabbath in the ways, because the to-do list got too long and she simply couldn't turn her attention away from it. So I want to encourage us to think about how we're going to approach this. Maybe you've experienced some moments of Sabbath this summer that you long to take with you into the fall. What might that look like for you? This has been the tradition of followers of Jesus throughout the generations, is to try to figure out, how do we unclutter some of our lives so that we can be present with God? There's a Christian mystic and a philosopher named Meister Eckhart. And in the 14th century, he talked about it this way: the spiritual life is a process of subtraction. The spiritual life is a process of subtraction. Henry Nouwen, who's more contemporary, writes that the Christian life is a steady progression of downward mobility. See, humility and simplicity are signs of a life in Christ. As we begin to say no, we start to winnow away those things that keep us from God, to actually rest in God's embrace. I believe that as we practice this art of Sabbath keeping, that we will find ourselves responding to this call of Jesus: come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So what exactly is a yoke that Jesus is talking about? So for many biblical scholars, the yoke has always symbolized religion. More specifically, the religion of the Pharisees that are gathering around Jesus, that he is finding himself continually in tension with, in opposition to. The religion of the Pharisees, from the perspective of Jesus, was a religion of 1,000 rules. And then to practice the Sabbath from this was to list all of the things that you're not to do. It was a faith of no, 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 no. Some of us have grown up in traditions just like that one, where practicing our faith meant a series of no's. And could we keep them all in line so that we could keep ourselves in the box that people wanted us within? Jesus, in contrast, offers a faith of yes. How do we say yes to God and yes to our neighbors? We talk about it here as rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love. I want to suggest that that is the yoke of Jesus, the yoke that he invites us to carry. Now, some would say that that yoke is just really easy because Jesus doesn't demand much. The yoke of Jesus is easy because Jesus doesn't demand much. Jesus says right there, my yoke is easy, burden is light. Well, so does that mean that? And I want to suggest that no, when we hold in tension this invitation to how Jesus is with the followers, his followers, we hear things like the Sermon on the Mount. What we experience are radical ways of living out in the world that are anything but easy. Jesus is calling us to do justice and love kindness and walk humbly. Those are hard things to both do justice and walk humbly. People in Ferguson are finding themselves in that tension. How do we speak out for what is right in a place that has fallen apart and is broken? And then how do we do that with humility? It feels like those two are hard to hold together. One biblical scholar says it this way. What Jesus offers is not freedom from work, but freedom from onerous labor. Soul-sick weariness is not the inevitable consequence of all work, but rather of work which we are ill-suited for, of work that's extracted under compulsion and motivated by fear, or of work performed in the face of futility. There's also the weariness that comes from having nothing at all to do that feels like it truly matters. The easy yoke that Jesus calls us to is a yoke of purpose that demands all of who we are and summons forth our best. It's motivated by this passionate desire to see God's loving kingdom born and created here on earth. To accept the yoke of the gentle and humble Jesus is to embrace the worthy task that puts the soul at ease. So I want to invite you to think about those childhood memories when we talk about Jesus. Jesus as a carpenter. The image has never meant a whole lot to me, but this week as I was reading, I was really struck by this image that one pastor up in Seattle, Edward Marquardt, talked about. So you think about Jesus as a carpenter. One of the things that carpenters would have done in Jesus's day then is they would have created yokes for oxen. That's who would have been responsible for this. So when Jesus says, take upon you my yoke, he has a real experience of what it's like to invite someone to do this. See, Jesus would have been like other carpenters, designing and crafting personally tailored yokes that would be a perfect fit for that oxen. I think of it like a fine fitting pair of shoes. That's a different image than I have for taking on a yoke. If Jesus had this personal relationship to those and was creating them, he knew what it was like to build this for an animal. He knew what it might be like to build this for the people around him. So in this way, the Pharisees created unnecessary burdens for other people to carry, and Jesus creates a yoke that fits without unnecessary burdens for us to hold. That yoke of rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love. But I still wonder how that feels light. I still wonder what that looks like. One of the ways it looked for me this week was I met with a person from our church community. This is a person who's experiencing traumatic storms. The person longs for rest, and a sense of hope as everything around seems to be falling apart. Relationships are falling apart. The job is now insecure, more insecure than it's ever been. Family feels like it's falling apart. Everything. To be sure, all of us experience moments like this in our own lives to various degrees, and some of us find ourselves in one of those storms right now. For all of us who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, Jesus invites us to come and to find rest, to find hope, meaning, Sabbath, to touch salvation in this life. The person that I talked with was in a terrible cycle, a spiraling cycle, listing the wants and the wounds of life. The person was feeling hopeless and alone, and so we slowed down together. I believe what was happening is we were listening to God in the words and in the silence between the two of us. There are a number of things that this person holds, to be sure. These things are held tightly. And for the person to experience Sabbath, they'll need to be released. And there are other things swirling around this person, places of joy and of hope. But the cycle has become so deep that the person's having a hard time seeing it right now. I believe that what we were doing as we slowed down, and as we listened to one another's stories, and as we simply mirrored back to one another what we were hearing, where God might be in the midst of that, I believe we were practicing the art of Sabbath keeping. I believe that's what it can actually look like to pause together, to feel our feelings, to allow those emotions to rise, to not be afraid, to know that we can't know that it's going to get better or when, but we can know that we're in it together and that we can walk together through that place. In that journey of experiencing Sabbath together, of slowing down, we listen and we open to the ways that God is breaking into our lives. This is an amazing opportunity on this 3-day weekend, at least for many of us, because we'll have an opportunity to extend our Sabbath. And if you woke up this morning in a hurry to get here, or unsure about how to sign your children up with this new fancy thing on the computer, we can start right now. This can begin and mark Sabbath for us. This can be a place of slowing down together, listening for how God is calling us through words and through silence to a place of rest. There are things that we all hold tightly, that for us to experience Sabbath healing, we will need to find ways with others to let go of. I don't know what those are in your life, but I have them in mine. And I hope this morning we can begin to hold them a little less tightly. As we do that, I believe that things can break open, that we might see the joy and the delight that is around us and start to notice it. It happened for me this morning when Sarah was delivering a baby this morning at the hospital. And Sophia, thankfully, was staying at our house with Eleanor so I could open up this space. And I got nervous because it was around 7:30 and I needed to make breakfast for the kids back home. Except this whole place was opened up because, as you know, we don't have air conditioning. I wanted to keep all the fans on and the doors open so that when we got here this morning, it could feel like a place of rest, not like Bikram yoga. And I was nervous. We have a computer and all the, it would be bad if I came in and the piano had been chucked out of here and stuff. So I was getting ready to go and I felt this anxiety and I came in here and I sat for a moment and I read a little poetry and I went outside and Daniel, who's been here painting for a couple days, had shown up and he was just there. There are moments in my life where that experience would be much like the one that I had with Linda in the car, where I'd be so frustrated that we ended up on Interstate 80 and not Business 80. And then there are moments where I can be aware of the grace that's around me and know that we're in this together, that it's not all on my shoulders, that we are God's people, and there's nothing that we can do about that, not earning it ourselves, but just simply taking time this Sabbath to reflect that we are beloved children of God. And so Daniel was here to take that burden from me. And that felt like an easy yoke for me at that moment. I want to invite you, as we move toward the table, to think about how you might integrate Sabbath into your own life. Perhaps this morning is Sabbath for you, and maybe you marked it last night, or maybe you did this morning as you gathered and you entered into this time of worship. How might you, though, take time to be truly attentive to the joy that is around you the rest of this afternoon? How might you be with family and be with God in a way that is unhinged from guilt and rooted in a place of love? What might it look like for you to mark those moments? Or maybe for you, it's simply starting with 10 minutes. Can I take 10 minutes to be in the joy and in the love of God? To not try to prove my worth, but to simply be. What might we need to let go of as God's people? That the joys that are around us might be more real, invisible, and seen. The poet that I was reading this morning as I sat here is Christina Rossetti, and she writes it this way. O Lord, who art as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land, who beholds your weak creatures, weary of labor, weary of pleasure, weary of hope deferred, weary of self. In your abundant compassion and unutterable tenderness, bring us, I pray you, into your rest. May that yoke be ours. May that peace come upon us. As we gather around this table, may we hear anew that God holds us all in love and invites us to rest.